help me welcome our speaker tonight, Bill from Hatboro, Pennsylvania.
All right, Bill.
Hi, everybody. My name is Bill. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, everybody. It's good to have everybody out here. It's really, thank you, Mike, for asking me to come up and speak. It's an honor to be up here at this group. I got some of my first, like, real messages of solution-based AA in this room and outside under the pavilion there. To be here and, you know, be asked to share some of my experience with you guys is really an honor. So, just a quick qualifier. I do have a sobriety date. It's July 29th, 2016. I do have a sponsor who knows he's my sponsor. I've been through the 12 steps several times, and I do take other men regularly through the 12 steps as part of this process. All of that I've gotten in my life, I would say is a direct result of God, the 12 steps, and all of you guys. So, you know, I remember, you know, coming out of treatment, my first time, like a little over 10 years ago, and, you know, I'd hear speakers and it seemed like they really had it together. And it seemed like, you know, these guys really knew what they were doing. They had pieced their lives together and it gave me like a lot of hope that maybe, you know, that might be possible for me one day. So again, in hopes that maybe I can share some of that with, somebody else, it's really, really cool to be up here. This isn't my first go around with sobriety. I tried it my way and I tried it a couple different ways, but, the 12 steps have worked for me, you know, thus far, and they're working in the lives of many, many people I know. Just to go back a little bit, qualify myself, I was born and raised not too far from here in Bucks County, and, I'm the oldest of three. I'm 35 years old. I have a 30-year-old brother and a 28-year-old sister. My parents, no alcoholism in our genetic bloodline to speak of. However, they went 2 for 3 on their kids. My brother and I, both alcoholic, and, my sister, some tendencies, but, she, by all accounts, is normal. I say that to say, there was no shortage of love in my household, no trauma to speak of, nothing at least that, you know, I would have, identified as trauma when I first came in. You know, my parents very much gave us everything that we needed. And most of what we wanted as kids, I look back on my childhood, you know, very fondly. That's not to say that, you know, things didn't happen. I didn't have my own issues like anybody else. It's not to say it was a perfect childhood, but, you know, I bring that up for a reason because, you know, frankly, everything worthwhile that I've learned about the disease of alcoholism, my disease, and, you know, recovery from it, I've gotten in this book right here. This book tells me that I drink effectively because I like the effect produced by alcohol. When I first came in, I would have probably spun you a yarn, like, you know, about how tough I had it as a kid and all the times that, you know, my dad, like, grounded me or something, you know, some stuff like that. But that's not really the case. The case is, like, I love alcohol. I love the feeling that it gives me. I love what it does for me. And in fact, like, in spite of what it does to me. And I'll tell you, I don't remember the first time that I drank alcohol. I don't remember my very first experience with drugs. But I do remember as far back as I can remember, feeling what it's like to not feel whole on the inside. And I don't know if anybody can relate to that, but feeling like, you know, maybe you're one missing puzzle piece away from figuring it out. Maybe just a little bit more self-confidence, a little less anxiety, a little less fear, and maybe I'll be okay. Maybe I'll feel okay in my own skin. I think like a lot of that just happens as a result of growing up and being a teenager and life and all that stuff. And it's funny, man, like, I don't remember being like superb at anything in particular in my life, but I do remember being pretty damn good at drinking and getting high. And, I remember what that felt like. I do. Again, not the first one, but I do remember feeling whole and complete for the first time ever. I was never like the guy that walked out onto the, you know, basketball court and just dominated. I wasn't the guy that, you know, would walk up to any girl and ask whoever out and do so successfully at least. But I do remember, like, for the first time in my life, and like, I'm a thinker too. So, like, I don't know if anybody can relate to, like, you know, all those times in life and overthinking and overanalyzing everything. But that was certainly the case for me. Every misstep, I judge myself. I think about it endlessly. You know, what do people think of me? That kind of stuff. And, I remember, like, you know, again, I don't know if it was the first time, but I do remember, like, when I got drugs and alcohol on me, like, everything changed. My head stopped. It was great. Everything was quiet. I felt cool, calm, collected. I felt as confident as I needed to be. I felt as social as I needed to be, as intelligent as I needed to be. And that was my experience. And I loved it. It felt wonderful. And, you know, I don't think I would be here today if I didn't have some good times early on, you know. I'm sure that's probably the case for most of us. And I'll tell you, like, for a while, that's the way that it was. But again, everything that I've learned about this disease, I've, you know, taken out of the big book here. And, you know, what it says is, and I totally relate to this line, it says, at some point, liquor ceased to be a luxury and it became a necessity. And I know for me, like, that was the trajectory that I followed, you know. For a while, all was fun and good, you know, casual stuff, once in a while, whatever. And then it became kind of a daily thing, you know, daily in social settings, but daily. And then it became a daily solo thing. And for me, you know, my drinking took all forms, and I'll do my best to keep it, you know, in the bottle for tonight. But, suffice to say, much like, you know, many people go through, my alcoholism showed up in the form of many substances. You know, several in particular that I really, really, you know, found a knack for. You know, it's funny, like, when we talk about alcoholism, you know, my parents, no genetic predisposition to alcoholism, you know, nothing like that in my bloodline. My parents have a drink, they have a beer, two beers, you know, they're all set. They put the second one down, they call it a night. For me, like, you know, that sensation, that feeling of, like, I wasn't okay before, but now I am, is so profound and so all-encompassing that I will do anything to get more of it and to maintain it. And that's not, you know, what most people find, I think. That is kind of the difference, you know, between the alcoholic and the normal individual. So for me, I was willing to do anything I could to maintain that. So from, you know, 14 through 18, you know, every single day I'm breaking the law, I'm doing what I can just to get another one every single day, every single day. And then from 18 to 24 is like where it really took off. You know, right around the age of 17, 18 is where, like, I felt like, you know, looking back on it, I couldn't have identified it at the time, but, you know, in hindsight, that's where I would look back and, you know, say that it ceased to be a luxury at that point in time. I was no longer having fun. And, you know, for me, at the time, I kind of thought that I ran into a string of bad luck. You know, a couple things were going on simultaneously in my life. Like, on one hand, I was living a dual life, right? You know, on the outside, like, I was going to college and I was working a job, and I always had a job. So, like, it was easy for me to kind of separate myself from people who I knew had real problems, you know? You know, also, I kept getting in trouble with the law, like, once every 6 months, then once every 3 months, little stuff here and there, disorderly conduct, possession charge, DUI, possession charge, disorderly conduct, possession charge, possession charge, possession, you know, all these, like, every 3 to 6 months. And again, I kept just thinking I was on, like, a string of bad luck. And, you know, these little things, these consequences would happen, nothing super substantial as far as, you know, legally goes. However, you know, I spent a weekend in jail, which was, like, not super fun. But the most, like, profound thing that happened was I was really, really ashamed of myself. And I felt really, really guilty and, like, terrible. Because on one hand, like, you know, I had this notion in my head that, like, you know, I was raised better than this. I wanted better for myself, but I didn't really know, like, what another way of life would look like at that point in time. I didn't know what I was going to do without, like, the thing that made me feel like a human being, you know? I didn't know how the hell I was going to get on in life without, being able to have a little, you know, security blanket, so to speak, and the sense of inner okayness, which was very, very elusive, and like I was finding to be like narrower and narrower windows of feeling okay. But yeah, so I didn't know what recovery or life, you know, beyond this would look like. So again, I continued doing whatever I need to do. And it's funny, like, looking back on it, you know, I remember looking my dad dead in the eyes the first time that I got arrested. And I told him, like, I'm so sorry. This will never, ever happen again. And I meant it, like, with every fiber of my being. I really did. I was serious. Like, I wasn't going to keep living like this. And that was probably like the first of 10 of those conversations that we had. I'll never forget like the look in his eyes, and then like I'll never forget the feeling I had. And I didn't understand it because like sometimes I would, you know, I always meant it, and sometimes I would stick with it for like, you know, a couple weeks, maybe a couple months, sometimes a day, a couple hours. And each time that I like, you know, succumbed and, you know, I picked up again, I didn't know why. I really didn't know why it was. And, you know, time and time again, I kept banging my head on the wall. So, you know, fast forward a little bit. I'm 24 years old, May 24th, 2012. And, I got arrested for hopefully the last time in my life. You know, I was selling drugs to be able to get, you know, what I needed to get because, like, again, this thing was all encompassing and I didn't know any other way to live. And I frankly like, didn't believe it was possible. And at this point, life had gotten so bad to the point where every morning for about, you know, 2 years at that point, I woke up praying that God would just kill me. And every night, I'd end my night the same way, hoping that I wouldn't wake up from whatever I'd done the day before. That was where I was at. And I had tried to stop like many a times. Like I knew this wasn't a sustainable way of living. But again, frankly, I just didn't know how. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what it would look like. But I had tried like hundreds and hundreds of times through substitution. Oh, I'm just going to like sell drugs. I'm not going to do drugs. I'm just going to drink. I'm just going to drink like, you know, hard liquor. Maybe I'll switch to beer. I'm just going to smoke weed. Like all these things. And time and time again, like I ended up like, you know, basically completely alone on the floor of my basement, sweating, like, you know, half ready to crap myself and, you know, just crying, like really, really depressed stuff. You know what I mean? Hate life. So May 24th, I'm doing what I gotta do. I'm doing what I did every single day. My whole routine was like, you know, I'd buy a bunch of pills and then I'd go sell most of said pills. And then, you know, I'd have enough money to get by for the day. And, you know, I go down to, meet a guy in the neighborhood right next to mine. And, you know, long story short, the DEA shows up. So does, you know, a crew of these Bucks County, like, opioid task force members who were super nice. They weren't. But they were doing their thing. They were trying to keep the streets clean. But they, you know, so I tried to, like, pull away in my car with, like, 100 pills on me that I had just bought. And, you know, I heard these screeching tires to my right. Like, it was a nice day. I'll never forget it. It was, like, right around sunset. It was a nice night out. And I'm starting to try to like crush a couple of these things up on my lap. And I'm starting to drive away too. And I hear these screeching tires to the right. And I look over and I just think like, oh shit. Cause I knew exactly what was about to happen. And sure enough, like it was very bizarre. It was very surreal. You know, a couple of like unmarked SUVs pull up, a bunch of other cars from the parking lot pull and surround my car, completely normal looking cars. And, you know, all these, like, super jacked military dudes with AR-15s hop out pointing at my head. And, you know, they're screaming all kinds of profanities at me. And, yeah, I was quite scared. And, you know, I was really, really scared. But honestly, I felt, like, relieved. I did. I felt relieved because, like, life couldn't have, like, gotten too much worse at that point in time. And I knew, like, something had to give. And I knew it had to be something radical. So, you know, here we were. So they sent me over to jail and, I sit there for like a couple days, you know, no phone calls, no nothing. And, I remember like I finally got my first phone call and, you know, I called my father and like, I'll never forget his voice, because he was like kind of terrified, because like he had spent the last two nights driving all around town trying to figure out like why I never showed up for work and why I never came home, and he assumed I was dead. And you know, my dad said to me, he said, you know, Bill, you just graduated from college. You know, people seem to like you. You're not an idiot, but you act like one constantly. Why is it that you choose to go towards all of this darkness in life rather than going towards the light? Because you have plenty around you. And I, like, you know, I remember uttering back to him like the first honest thing I'd probably said to him in some time at that point. You know, I just said, Dad, I don't know. I don't know. It was a very good question and, you know, very well put. I didn't have an answer for him. You know, at the time, I didn't really know what it was that I was up against. What he said made sense, and it was, like, again, a good question. And I said, yeah, I don't know, Dad. That's a good point. And he was like, all right, well, congratulations. You're going to be unemployable for the rest of your life. And he hung up on me. And so I, like, went back to the cell block to marinate on that for a while. And so I sat there for a couple months, and you know, my dad ended up like getting me a lawyer, and the long and short of it was, like, after a couple more months, I got released into this pretrial intervention program, and I went to a treatment center inpatient. I'd been to like several outpatients for the first, or you know, in the last couple years before that, but always found a reason to kind of distance myself from everybody, you know, just trying to pick out differences, why I wasn't like everybody else and why I could do it on my own. And clearly, you know, that had been so massively successful. So I went to treatment, and I finally, like, I thought, had, you know, surrendered. I was 24 years old, and I went in with my hands up and just, like, you know, basically, like, I don't know how to live. Like, please, somebody show me how. And they did, and, like, you know, a lot of people in here have probably been to treatment, and you know what they tell you. Go to 90 meetings, 90 days, get a sponsor, get a home group, you know, take a commitment, these kinds of things. Work the 12 steps. I heard all these things, and I did them all, with the exception of two things. I went to like 86 meetings in 90 days, if I'm being honest. And I also never did the 12-step crap that they were talking about. I thought, you know, those posters on the wall are good and all, but, you know. And I say that for a reason, because, like, I'm a big believer in the 12 steps now. And again, this wasn't my first go around. So, like, I spent the next couple years, and it was bizarre. Like, I remember, you know, the first year of recovery being a really weird and wild time. I felt like an infant being dropped off on the planet for the first time ever. Like, I didn't know how to do anything sober. I didn't, like, I felt awkward as all hell going into a room full of a room full of people, some my age, some older, some younger, and just, you know, hi, my name's Bill, and this is how I feel, you know, that kind of stuff. And it was, like, weird. It was really, really weird. I didn't know what to do. But I kept going back, and people started to, like, recognize my face, and people were very nice, and that was, you know, that was great. And, like, in the beginning, that was enough for me, just to have, like, a little bit of social interaction. And then I started to meet some guys, and, you know, a couple of them are in this room, to, you know, today. And, yeah, I mean, like, those first couple years, my whole life was, like, predominantly predicated on, like, going to meetings and doing social events with people in recovery, which is great. There's nothing wrong with that stuff. However, nothing really changed, like, on the inside for me. So, like, what life looked like on the outside, first couple years, my life did get better. I mean, like, when you stop, you know, putting like a couple $100 worth of illicit substances in your body every day and, like, breaking the law, life tends to get better. And, you know, for me, that's exactly what happened. So, like, externally, like, things started getting better. You know, when I first, like, came into the rooms, I didn't have anything. I had, like, a negative bank account balance, no friends, no cell phone. I smoked cigarettes at the time, but couldn't afford to buy them. And, you know, like, whatever, anything, like, worthwhile that you might consider, like, worth having in life, I didn't have it. I was a year away from having a driver's license again, like, all kinds of stuff. And slowly but surely, actually, like, not that slowly, like, those things came back. I made some friends. You know, my like relationships with my family started to get better a little bit. I got a job as a waiter, and then I got a job in like the field that I went to school for. And soon enough, I got a license back, and I bought a car, and I got a girlfriend. And like, to me, all that I really cared about at the time was like continuing to make my life better. Like, that was it. I didn't do any service work. I never touched the 12 steps. And, you know, 3 years later, I'm in the back of the room in meetings, screwing around with my buddies, like completely forgetting where the heck I came from and how desperate I was to even have like the ability to laugh and just have a single moment of peace and contentment. And I'd forgotten all about that. And, all I cared about was like, you know, getting me more. It was still like the same thing. It was the same game as I was playing out in the streets, but like in here. So what happened for me was I ended up doing this, you know, exactly what they told me would happen. You know, they said like, you'll start working the steps in reverse and you'll start, you know, like all these weird sayings, but like I stopped going to meetings. And then I relapsed, and I relapsed for like 9 months. And I was out there for a while, and I'll tell you, like, it's always funny to me in my head, because, like, I always think, like, oh, I didn't lose anything, but, like, at the time, the most important things to me were my job and my girlfriend, and I lost both of them. So I did lose things, and, but, like, legally, like, I didn't get in any trouble legally, fortunately, and, so, you know, it didn't last too long. I don't have, like, a significant threshold for pain. And, you know, after a little while, it got pretty miserable. And I remember being at the lowest point of my entire life at now 28 years old. And I'll never forget July 28th of 2016. I was fresh out of ideas. And furthermore, I was pretty resentful at, like, all you guys, too. Ask me why. Well, I thought, like, I did what you told me to do, and it didn't work. You know, I thought, like, I went to the meetings, like, I got that sponsor, sure, I abused the guy like a free therapist, but, like, you know, and I never did any actual work or helped anybody else out, but, like, I went to a lot of meetings, and, you know, I knew what those steps were, and, yeah, so, like, I was of the mindset at the time, like, you know, screw this, like, screw AA, all the A's, like, I was done with it. But even more so, like, I was done with how my life was going at the time. So, you know, I knew something needed to give. My big grand thinking at the time, and this is, like, where my own thinking gets me, I thought it was, like, a hot day outside. I thought, I know what I'll do. I'm going to go for a jog. And what's going to happen on this jog is I'm going to, like, 'cause I feel like crap right now. I'm going to force myself through a torturous jog, and then my endorphins are going to be up. And then when they're up, somehow that's going to, like, transmute into some good momentum wherein, like, I'm going to have this, like, Rocky-type story of recovery, and, like, I'm going to rise from the ashes like a phoenix. So what actually happened was, like, I ran, like, an embarrassingly short distance down the street, maybe 50 yards, and I'm being generous. And I'm, like, panting and sweating, and I just break down, like, crying in the middle of the street. And quick side story. So I mentioned earlier that my brother, you know, is an alcoholic as well. My parents went 2 for 3. You know, my brother, who's younger than me, you know, when I first got sober, he just was having a very difficult time getting it, suffice to say. You know, we tried hard to have him get sober at the same time, and it just wasn't happening. Meanwhile, you know, God has a funny way of showing up in life. Meanwhile, when I relapsed, he, through a set of his own circumstances, found himself getting sober through the 12 steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. And my brother, who has always been kind of like a knucklehead, like, my whole life, like, he was, like, the younger of the two of us, and, like, when we go out in public, like, I would be the one that would speak for the two of us. And he wasn't, you know, the most articulate individual, nor was he the brightest bulb in the box. Now, I say all this today, not to crap on him by any means, because he ended up, I credit him with helping to save my life. I picked up the phone that day and I called my brother, and it was really, really bizarre because, like, I recognized his voice on the phone because he's my brother and I've lived with him my whole life. And, But like at that point, like after hearing his voice, like nothing else sounded the same. And what I mean by that is my brother sounded like very, very free. And he sounded very happy and content and full of life and joy and curiosity. And he sounded like he had aged like 10 years in wisdom and maturity in like the last 6 months since I last, you know, dropped him off at that recovery house he went to. And I remember he started talking to me like I go through my whole thing, blah, blah, blah. And he's like talking to me about God and service to others and humility and the 12 steps. And those were four things that were suspiciously absent in my last run at recovery. So like that phone call, like one, he clearly had something that I didn't have going on. And number two, just based on the content of what he said, you know, I was just doing some simple math in my head, like, all right, I missed a couple of things for sure. And so he brings me to my first like real solution-based AA meeting, at least like the first time when I was ready to hear a solution anyhow. And I sit down with the same guy that took him through the steps, and kind of like I had done before, I was, you know, ready to dump all my problems on this guy in hopes that like he would have some nice stuff to say. And I remember like I said to him, like, well, if you can believe it, like, I relapsed 9 months ago. I lied to everybody about it, and my girlfriend at my job left me. Can you believe that? And he said, Bill, let me stop you right there. I could care less. And I was like, what? And he said, yeah, I could care less. And nobody cares about your problems. And I said, well, aren't you supposed to love me until I love myself? And he said, you've been loving yourself just fine. Right. How's that been going for you? And I said, oh, I'm here in this basement with you, and I want to punch you in the face. And so he said, I'm not trying to be a jerk. It's just not about you anymore, and I'm going to show you what I mean by that. And I was really, really pissed at this moment in time because, like, I thought he was supposed to love me and say nice stuff. And then he's like, we're going to sit down and we're going to go through the 12 steps and we're going to do it pretty quickly. And I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. Easy does it, right? And he's like, well, let me ask you a question, Bill. How do you feel right now? And I said, borderline suicidal. And he's like, all right, good. In that case, do you want to get better soon or do you want to easy does it? And I'm like, Christ. So we start going through. We sit down that first night and we go through the first 3 steps. And he has me get on my knees, which I was highly uncomfortable with at the time. And as a guy who was raised Irish Catholic, and from the time that my parents stopped making me go to church, I had a very difficult time kind of like decoupling the idea of God from the idea of religion. But, you know, suffice to say that he at least got me to believe that he believed in something, because he had something going on that I didn't have going on either. He had that same goofy look in his face that my brother did. And he looked happy, and he was excited. Only one of us was excited to be in the church basement that night, and it was him. And so I believed that he believed in something. Simple math told me that, like, all right, like, we could start here, me and this guy together. That's, like, better than me trying to do this on my own. Sure. And that was enough for me to make my start. And, you know, we got on our knees, and he said, like, look, from here on out, we're not going to do Bill's will anymore. We're going to do God's will. And I was like, in the moment, it sounded so cool, you know? I was like, yeah, nice. That sounds good. You know what I mean? And then I started walking away, and I turned around, and I was like, wait a second. What the fuck does that mean? God's will. How do I know what God's will is? And he says, I'm going to make it real simple for you. And this is like, I like this because I've used it as a North Star in my life to this day. He said, I'm going to make it simple for you. In any given situation, if you're going after the outcome that's solely there to benefit Bill, it's probably Bill's will. But if you're going after the outcome that's better for the other party or parties involved, it's probably God's will. And that was like simple enough for my thick skull to get, you know, to let sink in at the time. And I've used that, again, as a North Star to this day. Not to say every time I've made the right choice. I'll tell you that, like, at times when faced, you know, with that kind of fork in the road, I've chosen to do Bill's will, and, like, there have been times that I've regretted it. I've never, ever gone the God's will route and regretted it. In spite of that meaning sacrifice to my time, my energy, my patience threshold, whatever it might look like, I've never once regretted it. In fact, like typically the greater the sacrifice, like the better of a decision it was. And, so anyway, like this was like kind of my first thought, or like the first time I was even exposed to this idea of like a complete psychic change. Because what the book tells me, and like I validated this with my own experience, is that like my problem isn't drugs, it's not alcohol, it's the fact that every single thought, decision, or action in my entire life has always boiled down to one thing and one thing only. How can Bill feel better about himself? That's it. And that has taken the form of drugs, alcohol, relationships, friends, money, cars, jobs, promotions, the gym, food, whatever, gambling, all of it, everything you can think of. And I've tested all that, like inside of sobriety. I've like a lot of times mistakenly thinking that happiness is still just one thing away, one finite external thing away from being okay. And time and time again, they've all let me down. And the only thing that has ever given me any sustainable, long-term recovery or connection to myself, to the world around me, has been this idea of God, one that I've accessed through the 12 steps, and through service to others. So to kind of, you know, keep going on that thought, you know, we did a fourth step, right? Or I did a fourth step and I shared it with them in a fifth, and I won't take you through like every single step, but I will say that for me, I didn't have a singular, like, profound white light experience moment. I always just say that, one, because it's true, two, because if there's anyone new in the room and, like, they read about that experience that Bill had in the book, I don't want them to think that, like, maybe they're doing it wrong if they don't have that. I didn't have that. There wasn't one singular moment for me, but rather, like, a culmination of little moments, if that makes any sense. And, you know, I'll never forget, like, we go through and I make a couple amends and, like, I'm looking people in the eyes for the first time ever and like actually acknowledging where I was wrong. You know, can you forgive me? Here's how I hurt you. Like fully accepting like what I did that was wrong. Not saying I'm sorry. None of that BS that I'd done before, but I was wrong. Can you forgive me? What can I do to make it right? And being like fully ready, willing, and able to do whatever it was to make those things right. And the ninth step comes with some promises. And they started to come true in my life. I was walking around starting to feel free. I felt like I could look the world in the eyes again. It was crazy. Like, I don't even know if I like consciously acknowledged it at the time. And then I kept going, right? So like we go through, you know, 10 and 11 and, you know, I knew practically what that looked like for me at the time. I don't know if I could tell you that like I had this super deepening, just like establishing in the first place, a conscious relationship with anything that I was willing to call God. Was a pretty big step forward for me at the time. So like, I couldn't tell you that I had this massive like deepening and enrichment of that experience right out of the gate. But like, what I will tell you is this. 3 months in, maybe, I'm 3 months sober and he tells me like, all right, you're going to start sponsoring other guys. And like the way that I had done, you know, gone through the process or like, well, not gone through the process my first time around, the idea of sponsoring another guy with 3 months sober to me was ludicrous. You know, because I had always heard these sayings like, oh, like as far as sponsorship goes, like if you want what I have, you'll do what I've done. And in my head, I'm thinking to myself, like, I have a head full of anxiety, fear, insecurity, still some lingering depression, and pretty shaky foundation here. Like I'm better than I was on day one, but like I don't want what I have, let alone give it away to one of these poor pricks in the meeting. And, but that wasn't the point. The point wasn't that. The point was this, that like I was 28 years old on this day, whatever day it was that like I first approached another man to take him through the steps. And this was the first day of my entire life that one thing wasn't different. My head told me, this is what my head was telling me at the time. All you need to do, dude, is get that job back and get that girlfriend back and you'll be good. Like, even though this is going well, like, you know what you really need. That's what my head was telling me, which was not abnormal at the time. What was abnormal was that my feet did something different. My feet walked towards another guy in a meeting, super awkwardly, and asked him if he could use any help. And I think he said no. But the next guy said yes. And we started going through, and like, I remember I felt so shaky and awkward, and I didn't know if I was doing it right. Like my sponsor, when he said all this stuff to me, he was taking me through. He sounded like, he had so much conviction and he sounded like cool when he was doing it. And I called him afterwards. I was like, dude, you sounded like really sure of yourself and cool. I feel like a total jackass doing this with this kid. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. And he's like, no, that's perfect. Keep going. And so I did, like, again, in spite of what my head told me, like, you know, I kept it moving. And sure enough, like, you know, I got another sponsee, and like, not everyone made it, truth be told. But a couple did, and I did. And I'll tell you, like, I started having these weird experiences, like, where within my first 6 months, like, there was a guy who came to me and said, like, yo, I just sat down with my mom, like, the one I told you about that I robbed and wasn't going to talk to me ever again, and she just invited me back over for dinner after I sat down and made that amends with her. And, like, another guy was telling me how this guy, like, hadn't seen his kids in, like, 2 years, and his wife wanted nothing to do with him. And she had him over unsupervised to see the kids. And all of a sudden, like, I'm hearing this stuff, and I'm realizing that, like, oh, like, it felt good to, like, hear these things, and I didn't know, like, what that feeling was. I realized, like, my time not being spent, like, exclusively on myself is actually providing me this thing that feels oddly like that sensation I was looking for when I bought those sneakers a couple months ago. I just wanted to feel okay, and I actually feel okay right now. This is nuts. And a couple things happened. Like, one, again, there wasn't, like, a single moment, but if there were a single moment, it was right around, like, month 6, we'll say. I was driving down the street. I was on Route 309, actually. It was late at night. I had the windows down, and it was quiet in the car. I didn't have any music playing, and I kind of, like, realized for the first time in my adult life, my head was just quiet. It was so nice. It was so nice. There wasn't this constant replaying of what did 80,000 people think of me today, what kind of mistakes did I make, self-judgment, anxiety about the future, fear of the past, regret, all that stuff, living in the past, the present, never here, now. For the first time ever, I felt like I was in the here and now, and it was awesome, and I felt wonderful. And I, like, started to cry a little bit because all I wanted, like, for so long was an escape from that mental rat race, and I didn't know how to get it. And sure as shit, like, despite me not really fully thinking this whole deal was going to work, it was working. And, you know, they say in the book, like, deep down in every man, woman, or child is the inherent idea of God. And, you know, what I've always taken that to mean is, you know, from the time, like, anybody, you know, is a little kid, right? Like, you do something, like, nice for somebody else, you share your toys, you hold the door for somebody, you know, you help your mom or something like that. It feels good. Like, it feels like you can feel it. Like, when you do something nice and, like, good, you can feel it. Almost as if, like, if there were a God, that he had programmed something into each and every one of us to be this little positive reward feedback loop to say, do more of that. Conversely, when we hurt somebody, when we lie, we cheat, we steal, that feels some type of way too. Almost as if there were a God, he programmed us to say, do less of that stuff. That's no good. And, you know, again, like, perhaps I'm just talking about, like, having a conscience. But to me, you know, that idea, and that feeling, again, has kind of been, like, part of my North Star when it comes to, you know, my idea of God. I believe God to be synonymous with the word love. And I believe that when I am loving and selfless and caring towards others around me, that is when I feel most universally connected to whatever that source, that creative intelligence that I choose to call God for lack of trying to use a million words to describe it, is. And that's when I feel most closely connected. So, like, this was a pretty profound realization for a guy to have, like, 6 months into this whole process, and I kept going. Like, at this point, I was, like, feeling it work, you know? So, like, all of a sudden, I was starting to sponsor guys, and I had that same level of confidence and conviction in what I was saying as my sponsor had, and I was, like, on fire with this whole thing. And that lasted for a while, like, probably, like, you know, another year and a half, 2 years, and life got better. I stopped focusing on fixing my own life, and my life fixed itself, and it was crazy. You know, all the while, I'm in AA, I'm sponsoring other guys, I'm helping other people, I'm super involved, And, you know, that's like kind of what I'm physically doing. But around me, like, the world is piecing itself together. I'm like building new, more enriching friendships. I'm building deeper relationships with the guys around me. You know, I found myself in a better job that, like, I'm, you know, I was really good at. And, you know, all these wonderful things are happening. I had a few more bucks in my pocket, and that's all, like, all that stuff's great. And then, like, it doesn't happen consciously. Like, this is, you know, my honest experience in this process. You know, I've been involved actively in AA for the last 6 years and some change. And I'll tell you, like, I wish I could end my talk right now and say, like, ever since that 12th step, shit's been good. Not the case. Not the case. Number one, like, you know, not as a cautionary tale, but just like, you know, an honest take. I've had some of the most difficult times in my entire life in the last 6 years. Some of the most painful moments. I've also had the most beautiful and enriching moments of my entire life that continue to come to this day. I've had a couple of them in the last like 30 days. And that continues to happen. Both do. And there have been times where I like wanted to call it quits. Not necessarily like, you know, honestly, like the thought of using drugs or alcohol to change how I feel, that was one of the first things to go. And that hasn't really come back since. But in those tough moments, it's more just like a lack of willingness to proceed for a little bit, you know? But thank God I do have 12 steps. I do have a fellowship of you guys around me to pull me back onto the path, because like every single time that I felt that way, it's only preceded these moments that like are now new kind of like high points for me emotionally, spiritually, in life. And, I'll tell you again, like I'd love to tell you, I walked like the straight and narrow path for the last, you know, 6 years. It's just been me and God linking arms, walking down the broad spiritual highway. Nah. You know, like things come up in life, and you know, a lot of times we talk about like, at least like, you know, like with guys, we joke around a lot, but I'm sure it's applicable to the women in the room too. Like we talk about sex and checks, the two things most tied to the ego, money, relationships. And when I'm talking money, I mean jobs, prestige, my family thinking I'm super successful, this kind of stuff, actual money itself, what I can buy with it, all that kind of stuff. And then like relationships with women, you know, both of those things at times have suspiciously looked like God to me. And, you know, it usually happens, like, I don't ever make this conscious choice, right? Like, my head, because, like, I'll be on the heels of, like, this, you know, momentous, like, run in AA. I'm sponsoring guys. Everything's good. I'm happy. You know, Mike invites me up to speak. That's great. And then, you know, my head's still telling me, dude, you're doing so great in AA. This is awesome. But my feet tell me, like, dude, there's a promotion over there. If you just buckle down and focus, that's another 20 grand, baby. You got it. And like, you know, and I think like, oh, what would my life look like with that amount of money in it? Or with that title next to my name? What would my life look like if I was dating her and not her? You know, this kind of stuff. And I'll chase those things down. And somebody told me once that like, whatever you spend the most time thinking about throughout the day, that's your God. So again, I say like many times I've had like money or a promotion at work or my career or a relationship, you know, with a woman suspiciously look like God to me. And I've chased it down as if it were, only to find out that once again, at the end of that road, like shit, I'm the same restless, irritable, and discontent alcoholic. Now I'm in a relationship, and now I have like this new title next to my name, and I'm still not happy, which is like almost even more so perplexing, because like you get these things that you think you want, and then it's like, ah, fuck, it's not here again, you know? But, you know, I say that, one, to be honest, and two, you know, to say that, again, thank God I've had a wonderful transformative experience with these 12 steps, and like I've, you know, thus far I've been able to come back, you know, onto this path. And I know where the answers are, and I know where the most meaningful things in my life are today. And throughout the last, you know, 6 years and some change, again, I will say that I've had some of the highest highs, some of the lowest lows, but I've gotten to help a lot of people, and a lot of people have helped me. And I wouldn't be anywhere near where I am today if it weren't for a lot of the people in AA. You know, if it wasn't for somebody coming up and like sharing a message at the beginning of my recovery and me thinking like, man, cause like I was just a, you know, kid like trying to get off of parole. And, you know, I'd see some people at the front of the room who seemed like, you know, oh, that guy has a suit on. Like he must like have something going on. You know, he speaks half decent. He looks like he has a little bit of confidence in himself. And, you know, these people, like they, when they spoke, it seemed like they had felt exactly like how I had felt on the inside. They'd gone through some of the same stuff that I thought like precluded me from ever having a wonderful, happy life in sobriety. I didn't think it was possible. Like I thought maybe best case scenario, I could stay out of jail. That was about as good as it possibly could get. What I didn't think is that I'd regain self-esteem, you know, enough belief in myself to stand in front of a room full of my peers, enough to go on a job interview sober, enough to talk to a woman sober, enough to go to a party sober, making friends sober, all these things. And I certainly never thought I would laugh sober. But I'll tell you what, in the last 6 years, I've laughed more than I ever have. I've made, you know, more of the best quality friendships and relationships than I've ever had in my entire life. And typically, the less I focus on my career, the more successful my career ends up being. I still haven't figured out the relationship one yet, but that's okay. You know, I have learned a lot about myself. And I'll tell you, yeah. It's been a wild ride. I just turned, you know, 35 about, I don't know, 3 weeks ago. And I was out with a group of guys, some of them in this room, and we were all just kind of reminiscing on some of the experiences we've had along the way. And I'll tell you again, like, it's funny how God shows up in the form of other people in life. You know, I believe at some point in my life, God showed up in the form of that tatted DEA agent with the gun at my head. I really do. And at other times, I think he's shown up in the form of my friends, you know, some of my closest friends who are in this room today. You know, being there to carry me when I couldn't carry myself, and also being there to, you know, prompt me to make sure I'm always giving it away. Because frankly, like, again, everything I have today, which is like quite a bit inside now, my life is wonderful today. It really is. I have quality relationships with these guys. My family trusts me. I get to go on vacations and do fun things and laugh and try things that previously were unthinkable, walk through fears on the regular, you know, all these things. And furthermore, like, my phone rings quite a bit. And the best thing about when my phone rings is usually somebody, like, going through something that I've been through myself, and just me being there to shut the hell up and listen is really, really sufficient. And the more I do that, the more peaceful my life is. The less I think about myself and the more I keep my head focused on others ahead of myself, the quieter my head is and the less I'm worried about me. So, anyway, I owe everything I have to this program, a lot to this meeting in particular, because it was one of the first places that I got any of that hope or inspiration. You know, I'm excited to see what the future has to hold for myself and everybody in this room. And, you know, I just feel incredibly grateful to be here with you guys tonight. So I appreciate it. Thank you.